Okay. Well, we had several inquiries today in the last 2 weeks about the schedule for the new grantees and what's happening there. And we're going to talk about that today, and we're going to kind of wind up the scan that we did to try to get a handle on where all the grantees were. And we're going to kind of try to tie that into a bigger picture of where grantees are and possible strategies depending on where they're at and what they might do moving forward. So we're going to talk about all of those things today and then answer any questions people might have and try. We'd like to get your ideas about what you're doing and how you're handling this pandemic. Well, we always get started with what's happening in Washington. And, you know, what's happening in Washington is what's happening around the country. Everyone's on shut down and working from home and going into the office occasionally, and they've got quite a few things on their plate. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Heather. Heather, have you heard anything from Washington or what might be going on up there?
All right. Well, hello, everybody. We're excited that you're here joining us today. I did hear from HQ just that there's no new updates. You know, you guys were kind of in that long wait period again. We're just you know, while they're reviewing the applications for the latest RFA. So we're just in that long wait period. But there are a couple of things that we always want to push and remind you guys of. One of the first ones is that Brownfields 2021. So for those of you who haven't marked it on your calendar yet, Brownfields 2021, that's the National Brownfields Conference, is happening September 27th through the 30th. 2021 in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Again, that's Brownfields 2021 is happening September 27th through the 30th in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And if you want to learn more about that, you can go to brownfields2021.org. Now, they did just recently reopen the call for ideas. So if you had already submitted a call for ideas previously, don't worry, that submission is still good. But if you want to apply to present at Brownfields 2021, they did reopen a call for ideas, and that does close on March 8th. So if you want to learn more about that, again, you go to that brownfields2021.org, and you can learn more about that opportunity as well. So that's something we do want to bring to your attention. Now, on the HMTRI side of the house, we do have a couple bits of news that we always want to share with you guys and let you know. I think probably the most exciting one that we want to mention on there is just to let you guys know that we have selected the date for our next all grantee meeting. And the date that we're looking for those ones is May 4th through the 6th. Now, this will be a virtual meeting. We're going to hold it virtually again, and this is a different time frame than what we typically do, but that's, again, because of the dates of the National Brownfields Conference. So we're looking for a virtual all-grantee meeting May 4th through the 6th, and we'll hold it from that at like that noon to 3 Eastern time frame, kind of a similar time frame to what we held the last one. And for those of you that may not have joined us previously, this is a great time for everybody to get together, discuss, explore, network, and collaborate, and really, you know, have a great time exploring all things EWDJT, so those environmental workforce development and job training discussions. And Mike, maybe I'll toss it back to you.
Okay, we do have some other things planned. We're working on a webinar that we're going to segue into, probably be in the middle of March. So it'll be at the same time as one of the PLCs in March, either the 10th or the 24th, and we're going to have a panel discussing face-to-face training on that. So we're just organizing that as we go. We also are going to be having hopefully, if Brownfields occurs, we're going to have a booth there. And as last year, the booth will be not so much an HMTRI booth as an environmental workforce development job training booth, where you could use it as a place to drop literature off or meet people or just sit and hang out and meet people and talk about your program. So we're looking at having that booth. And we have submitted two abstracts for consideration and with environmental equity and also with job training, and those would be composed primarily of grantees. So as we get closer and things start to develop, and if those are accepted, we'll be looking for grantees to be part of the panels and the discussion amongst all the other people who are interested in job training. So we've got those things going on, and of course we're continuing with the PLC through the summer. This kind of segues into the questions. I had a couple of questions regarding, you know, what can you tell us about the schedule? We've submitted a grant so long ago, you know, September, and we may have talked to our regional coordinator, but we as Heather said, this is the long wait. We always, every 2 weeks, ask EPA where are we at, and I think often they're not. We may have as much information, or maybe even a little better conjecture than they do. We always post our best estimate of the way things might fall out. EPA has suggested it'll be late winter, early spring when these announcements are made. So we construct, and I will put in the notes our estimation that will may or may not change of how this might go. For those of you who submitted grants, we think that the announcements might be in the March-April timeframe. That seems like a while, but really we're into February, and it could be any time. They have a procedure where they're doing evaluations, and then they get a short list, and then it has to go up the ladder. Now, you have to remember, we're in a total change of government, so the top three levels of EPA are being flipped over. So we're not sure how that will work out. In fact, our new administrator, hopefully will be Michael Regan from North Carolina EPA. He's going to be the new administrator, and I expect the deputy administrators will change, and I'm not sure how far it'll go down. We're expecting and hoping that Dave remains our boss, essentially, with Channing working directly, where Rachel was our own project officer for heading up all the environmental workforce development job training programs. It'll be Channing, but he is also fairly new. So if we get the start date in the March-April timeframe, announcements, you start, as soon as you find out, you start working on your work plans. And this is a great time to reconvene with your supporters, begin looking at your trainers, which we'll talk about in a little bit, start scheduling things out, and you've got to get your work plans together in that May, June area, so spring into summer. Then after your work plans are agreed upon with the regional coordinators and project officers, you get your authorization to spend funds, which will hopefully be in the May-June timeframe. That brings us into starting to get serious about putting on classes. So now we start working on community awareness in the summer, this next summer. And of course, we'll have the National Brownfields meeting in the end of September. So you might look to a cohort in the fall of this year, and that would give you a rough idea. And as I said, this can go slosh either way, but it'll give you an idea. Keep in mind, if things go well, and I'm being positive about this, there will be another RFA for request for applications for the FY22 cohort. Now, nothing has been mentioned, nothing's been announced, but having said that, in the last couple of weeks, some interesting things have happened. Of course, we've got a whole flip in the administration. We, on day one of the executive orders, there was an executive order regarding racial equity and racial justice. That translates right into environmental justice. There hasn't been a order directly addressing environmental justice, but from what I've seen, I could see in coming months perhaps something coming out on environmental justice. And if you look at the history of that, it started out of Brownfields, and then there was an environmental justice program that floated through every agency in the government. And then when we had more conservative administrations, that was sequestered and kind of pushed down. And of course, now it's going to come up again. So now we're in an environment where you'll probably be hearing a lot more about racial equity, racial justice, environmental justice. So I expect we're going to be hearing more about environmental justice. That, of course, is directly affecting our program. We are an environmental justice program. That's why, that was what justifies us being an EPA, and that's what we do. And we always have to keep that in mind. So I'm looking forward to positive things. How that will translate into grant money and that is yet to be seen. Brownfields in general got a couple million dollars more, even this was in the last administration in the budget. So things are looking pretty good. There was, on day two of the executive orders, there was workplace safety during the COVID pandemic. So a lot of these things are being positive, and I hope this is going to be translate to getting a new RFA out, perhaps with even better funding. We'll just have to see how that plays out. In the meantime, those of you who have funded, applied for funding, we should know perhaps in a month and a half, where we all stand, and we can go to the next steps. Does anyone have any questions about what's going on in Washington right now? We're probably in the dark as much as anyone, and the regional coordinators. You might get your best information from your regional coordinator, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, because when you break down our 40 grantees or so, they're all in different states of progress. We have some who are just applying for the new grant, and there'll be about 15 of those people waiting for a re-up. It's either a re-up or a new grant that they haven't had in the past. We've got some who were funded just as that got going, and they're in the suspended animation. They haven't started yet. They're still in that program planning area. We've got some that are between cohorts. They've already had a cohort, and they're in between, and they're in a pretty good spot too, because they're almost like the ones that haven't started. They're in that planning stage where they could reconsider or relook at their recruitment and screening policies and their training policies. The ones that the grantees that are in the most difficult situation is that they were interrupted in the middle of a cohort. Not quite as many of those, but they were caught in the middle where they may have had a partial cohort. Some training was done and some doesn't. So everyone kind of fits into that category, which is one of the big parameters is starting date and how you're going to schedule that starting date. If you haven't started, there's a lot of considerations you may want to think about, and we'll talk about that in just a second. For example, you may want to think about your public health concerns in your community, where you think they're going. It's interesting, as these PLCs go on, everyone was shut down in the summer, and then slowly they're coming back. As we were talking about before the call, K through 12 are starting to come back. Some, they're doing the same thing we are. Some are hybrid, some are not. We have a different participant profile. Remember, I just said we're an environmental justice and environmental equity type of program. Our participants, depending on how we screen and recruited, may not have computers, may not know how to use computers, may or may not have phones. They run the gamut. We have grantees who have people online, working programs, doing online programming, online instruction. We've got some that are doing in between. Some are being able to deliver some classes online, particularly the non-core technical classes that don't require face-to-face, like asbestos would require face-to-face or lead abatement or hazwoper. So we've got that type of program, and they're all over the place. So that's something to consider, what your participant profile looks like. The other thing is your facilities. We were just talking about ECA, but we could talk about Cypress Mandela. We could talk about facilities that are very large. They allow themselves to allow very well for social distancing. They have special facilities. They have high bays. They've got outside and indoor facilities where they can move inside and outside. They can actually do face-to-face as part of their facilities. They may have a courtyard that they could work in. So that's another one of these variables. And then lastly, the issue of instructors. What kind of instructors are you going to use? Some of our grantees have in-house instructors. They've got people with OSHA certificates. They've got people who can teach HAZWOP or 1910-120 or asbestos or lead. They may have all those capabilities. Many, though, contract out to consultants. And we're going to talk about that because that's a whole other issue. So we have basically these four variables and where your start date is. And all of those are considerations. Now, when we did this scan, we wanted to get an idea of kind of where people were. And, of course, the questions we asked had to do with, are you teaching face-to-face? Are you doing hybrid? Are you interested in going back to face-to-face? One thing that came out very clear is that people need to do face-to-face in this type of training. Our target group, and the types of courses we teach, HAZWOP, asbestos, lead, confined space, they need hands-on face-to-face training. Almost everyone said, when we're able to, we're going to go back to face-to-face. Now, many are doing hybrid, and I would consider that a special group where you've got students that have computers, or you're buying them computers, or you're buying them laptops. Several of our grantees have justified using tablets instead of hard printed books. So they'll use a combination of printed materials and tablets. And part of their program, they're training their recruits to work on the tablets. And they can go into a hybrid type of training if they're able to find software, or if they can make their own software, do their own training online. It's certainly doable. That gets into this whole, is a one great big puzzle. Some of you who haven't started yet or are planning to start are going to have to think seriously about how you're going to screen and recruit your participant group. And as I said, this is an environmental justice program. Ideally, we're going into underserved populations with underserved people who may not have the skills, facilities, or ability to do what we're doing. There's other programs. If you're training the trainer, people are very sophisticated. They have the computers. They know what they're doing. We have to keep an understanding that not all of our programs are addressing that. Perhaps the most hardcore environmental workforce job training are working with ex-offenders, people that haven't used a computer, haven't used software. And we have to keep that in mind. And how can we accommodate that? Now, if this pandemic were to continue and there was just no way you could do face-to-face, you might say, well, we're going to have to adjust our screening and recruitment. It may become a criteria. Could you use can you use a desktop, or could you use a tablet? Could you work with us on this? You may already be doing, do you have a cell phone? Do you have an email address? So the level of your sophistication will depend, and those are parameters you have to think about way in the beginning. If you haven't started yet, those of you who are in between cohorts and haven't recruited yet, or those of you who have applications in, have to think long and hard about where are you going to be next fall. Because if you're a new recruit, you won't be training till next fall, and where are the public health situation going to be? In our survey, almost everyone said we're going to go back to face-to-face. We may do some hybrid depending on our student population and their capabilities, but we're going to go back face-to-face. We're going to be using phones. We're going to be using, a lot of them are using, the ones that are using computers are using email, and they're using Zoom or Team or GoToMeeting. They're using one of those as a communications effort. A few are using canned programs, particularly in soft skills. It might be financial management or some of those where they can lend themselves easier to online exercises. The people who answered that they're using, whether it's Zoom or online apps or self-training, say this poses a whole new set of problems. I mean, keeping students interested, keeping them motivated, keeping them, particularly in our target group, keeping them straight, so to speak. We have a hard enough time keeping with our retention rates when it's face-to-face, and we've talked a lot about this, of having your circles, your meeting circles or prayer circles or get-togethers in the morning where people are supporting each other and someone says, I'm dropping out, this is just too hard, I can't do it. Well, what happens when you're socially isolated and you've got those same people? What happens to your retention rates? So that we found that there's a tremendous problem when you're using computers. The more you rely on the computers, the more difficult it is to keep your retention rates up. A lot of people have problems with access, continuous access. Those of you who have kids in school know all of these issues. Keeping a child interested, keeping them online, what happens when something goes wrong with the program or the connection, all of those lead to it. Lack of facilities or equipment, whether it's respirators or masks or whatever it is. And even things as we always talk about as regular problems like transportation. What happens when someone graduates and he's got his credentials and nobody's hiring because of COVID? And it sets up a whole new set of problems. So when you sum up all of these things, when we look at this, the most capable technically and those who are able and trying to make this work are going to the computers. They all feel they have to do face-to-face, and they need to figure out how to get back to face-to-face. And we're going to, in our coming webinar, we're going to be talking about face-to-face and how can we improve our face-to-face training when it comes back and what happens. So we talked about what you may have to do in terms of recruiting and screening. You may also have to look at what kind of facilities you have. Some of our facilities that I mentioned, like Cypress Mandela, beautiful, huge facilities with lots of room to spread out. You might be a place where you've got training pads or you're using facilities, but very often you're relegated to a much more confined space. It might be a fire station, or it might be even a church in an urban setting. And the more urban programs have less space to spread out. And of course, you have to consider how are you going to do face-to-face when you're confined to a small facilities. Those are all things that, and the reason I'm mentioning that today is you may be in one of those situations, and I think we want you to know, and we're assuming and hoping that, and going to be pushing that EPA needs to know what you're up against. And that comes into consideration of whether you need to and when you need to talk to your regional coordinator. Those of you who, of course, haven't gotten your grant yet, that's not an issue. Those of you who are between cohorts, you may have to adjust your training schedule to try to push it out, just like everybody's pushing everything out, hoping that once these vaccines kick in, you know, are we able to can we go face-to-face easier as we go on? We're finding that as every month that passes, face-to-face is opening up. You see it in K-12. In the environmental workforce program isn't a lot different. At what point can you start moving classes more face-to-face? And if you're not using hybrid or you're not using computers, at what point can you start your programs? Because it's time you feel that it's clear you could set up, whether it's plexiglass dividers, you could figure, you could start with courses that are non-technical. Start with your soft courses, your anger management and your financial management. And many programs use that anyway as a screening device. They will do the soft skills first, and those tend to be They're not so much dependent on strong face-to-face, or they can be, you could reduce class sizes and have people distance, and you can teach those, the soft skills, save the courses that are the core technical courses for a future date. Now, if you were interrupted in the middle of it, some of you are having to perhaps give provisional certificates from your program that says, once we get going and you come back face-to-face, we'll complete this program and we'll give you certificates. But right now we can't do it because of our health department, or we're figuring out a way to do it. So again, everyone's a little different, and you'll need to work that out. As I was saying, you may need to talk to your regional coordinator. They will be giving extensions to those of you as you get towards that. Hopefully those that are getting to your second or third year will have submitted an application and will be re-upped. And then it's a non-issue. You could get extensions on your current grant. They will allow extensions at no cost to the government. You may be able to push cohorts that were scheduled for, say, this last fall or summer, push them into the next year. So instead of doing two cohorts, you may do three cohorts. You may have to make them shorter or more condensed. You may have to adjust your scopes of work. But that's something you need to bring up with your regional coordinator. And every region's different. Some of you may have already talked to it, and in a second we'll ask you if you've contacted your regional coordinator and see what their response is going to be and what they feel they are expecting from you during this period. Are they allowing everyone to go into hibernation, pick up, delay courses as long as we can, just like they did with Brownfields 21, just push it out. The last thing I wanted to talk about that came up in our survey was the whole issue. We've talked about start dates, the scheduling, the participant profile, and how you recruit, what kind of facilities you have or may not have. The last issue, it's a big one, is instructors. As I said, some of you have in-house instructors. You've got lots of capability. You've been in a program like this for a long time. You've got some that could teach some courses but not others. Some may be OSHA certified in some of them, not all of them. Many of you are going to have to go out for all of your training. Word of caution here is you're going to have to two things. One, you're going out for consultants, which means you're going to, if they're not on board already and you haven't been doing business with them in the past, and you're a brand new grantee, you will have to get three bids from three different consultants on the type of training you're doing. And when you look at this and the scope of work that you're going to have to send out and finding these instructors, you're going to have to find out the courses that you want to teach. And that's also an issue, because you may want to pare down and have to pare down from your grant what you're going to be teaching, but you get those courses. Number one is, can they teach it the way you need to teach it? And when can they do that? For example, you may have to develop a dialogue with available consultants and trainer in your area and say, these are courses that we want to offer. When can you offer them and how can you offer them? And if they say, well, we could offer all of them, but it's an online course, that may not fit with your student profile. In other words, they may be really hotshot consultants, have all the credentials, but they're used to training engineers, PhDs, and people who are going on site. They're not used to training people who may not know how to use a computer. So you've got to be extremely explicit in what you're doing in your program and how you're training. So you when you go online and start Googling these things, there's all kinds of instructors out there. Again, the fine print, are those instructors qualified in your state? Because every state, particularly for lead and asbestos, you have to, in some states, be approved by that state, and they have to approve the curriculum for that asbestos program, or they have to The others may have to qualify the instructors. And the state departments of health have lists of trainers in those states that are qualified to teach in those states. So you're going to have to make sure that where you're located, one, can they train the courses that you need training in? Can they train to the level of participants that you're presenting? Three, what is their schedule? Is their schedule similar to yours? And if they say, well, we can't do face-to-face now, you want to ask the question, when can you, as we loosen up? Or if we provide you with facilities, for example, with plexiglass barriers or with respirators or everyone will be socially distanced, can you train under those conditions? And you may get a positive, well, sure, I could do that. So you're going to have to create a dialogue with your trainers to make sure they're certified, make sure they're capable, make sure that they can treat your audience that you're training, and making sure that they can meet your schedule, which is another issue. So once you've done jump through all those hoops, then you want to get them onto the, if you need to, if they're not, if you haven't ever used them before, you may want to explain, I do have to get three bids, and I can send out an RFP, and we'll let things fall where they may. So many of you out there, particularly new people who may not have a history and have not established their training relationships, are going to face these obstacles. And it's just part of this whole COVID issue. Hopefully, as time goes on and everything opens up, all of these will disappear. But we're just in a difficult time now. And as I said, EPA appreciates this. And I'm sure that working with your regional coordinator will help you, and it'll give you a direct line to EPA. So have any of you talked to your regional coordinators at all since through this pandemic? I'm just going to let you unmute or whatever. Has anyone had contact with their regional coordinators out there? Kind of quiet. Okay, well, there's a good chance that that has not happened. I think everyone's lying low, and I wouldn't be surprised if regional coordinators don't know a heck of a lot more than we know about this, but we'll have to, everyone's kind of in the same boat. We're seeing that in our relationship with EPA. So I'm sure as we get closer to the summer and these announcements, there'll be more activity picking up. Any ideas from some of you of what you've been doing that has either worked or not worked, or some of the problems you're running? Is there anyone doing a cohort now actively out there?
Hi, Mike. It's Milady from Puerto Rico.
Hi, Milady.
So we actually, a lot of what you said earlier in terms of the screening criteria, we actually have had to go towards that currently, making sure that the people we enroll, at least at this time, have access to computer or at least a phone so they can attend the trainings when we provide them virtually. Since we don't, you know, we're unable to provide tablets and stuff right now. I don't know what's going to happen with the proposal in the future. But at least right now, we need the participants to have those items as well as internet. So that has become a part of our screening criteria, unfortunately. But hopefully in the future, that may change, and we can probably help them out a little bit more. I do have a current cohort that is actually beginning this next week. They're going to start with Hazwoper. So what we're doing is that they're doing the theory part of it. They're doing it virtually. And then once they have to go towards practice, then they have certain hours that are being done in person. Because we actually offer forklift as well. And that one definitely has to be in person so they can practice with the machine. But I know that we actually subcontract for these trainings right now And we just make sure that, you know, they have protocols in place and safety. We are dividing the groups when they have to be in person. If our cohort is 10 or 15 people, then we just make sure that no more than 5 participants go on one day, just to make sure that they have the space and the equipment and all of that necessary. So it's taken a lot longer in terms of training because we have to keep dividing the groups into much smaller groups than we were used to. But we are trying to, you know, deal the best we can with what we have. But we are doing half, we're doing it hybrid. We're doing half virtual, whatever we can do virtually. We prefer to have it that way. That way, least exposure, and then the certifications that need to be in person. And then we just take the proper precautions.
So you're jumping right in, into the pool with the most difficult courses, the Haswapper, forklift, person-to-person, and those face-to-face. Are you, and you're using consultants that feel they can deliver the face-to-face
yes.
Per 1910-120?
Right. We make sure that they have all the, obviously, the required certifications to provide these trainings, but then we also now are requesting a written protocol from each of our consultants or the people that are providing the training. That way we know that our participants are going to be safe. So they are, it's more, we're requesting more paperwork and, you know, more evidence now than we were obviously before in terms of what COVID comes with in order for them to be in person. Otherwise we wouldn't, because for a lot of our participants, we actually even have to provide transportation, because in Puerto Rico, transportation is a really, really big issue. So we have been able to make alliances with some companies that provide free transportation for us. But now we need to make sure that instead of a small bus, they provide us with the biggest bus they have available, and then just send like 5 participants so they are really far apart. So it's been different. It's been hectic, but it's being done. So we just have to think out of the box.
You brought up an interesting point that I forgot about. You may have to go to 5 or 6 consultants. In other words, not everyone's going to be able to do your whole training program, which is great, because if you could blanket, here's the courses we need to offer, what can you do and how would you do them? You might have one person doing 1910-120, another person doing asbestos,
right,
and a forklift person, you know, that's doing that. That's a very good point.
Mike, it's Alma. I have a question. Can
yes,
you
Alma.
Me? Hi.
Yes, I can. In fact, I'm very interested. I'm glad you're on, because you heard the silence of whether people have contacted their regional coordinators. And one of my favorite regional coordinators on the line. So,
I was being quiet for that reason. I was wanting to hear what they had to say.
No, fair. Now, what are you as much in the dark as I am and everybody else is, or what can you tell us?
Well, crickets on the status. I was looking at your agenda. Sorry, I was reading these executive orders, so I was multitasking. Let me pull up the agenda that you have. Crickets on the updates from Washington and the status. Okay, so nothing to let you know in on that. Sometimes I get the better news from you guys. So
yeah,
so
I think you do.
Kudos to Mike and HMTRI.
Is there any pressure to contact your grantees? Are we letting things simmer right now because of this COVID?
It depends on each region. I definitely would encourage you all to communicate. This is what I tell my grantees, but every region is different. I like for them to keep me up to date, not just the quarterly reports, but, you know, it's like having a good working relationship where if they have a question that pops in their mind, they call me or they send me an email or they text me. If they're having an issue, they contact me, they call me, they text me, whatever works best for them, depending on their situation. They may have something that comes up in the middle of a training course, so they're not going to probably send me an email. They're doing something real quick. They may be a quick text, Alma, hey, can we chat? I have this issue, you know. It's definitely a working partnership. So whatever you work out with your PO is what's best. That would be my advice to the grantees. The same thing for any prospective applicants. You know, if you got a question in your mind, if you're a current applicant, I did get a request from our applicant on this last cycle. Hey, should I be doing this or something? I'm like, just letting, and I just let her know, hey, I'm hearing crickets also, but let's just be patient. We know there's an administration change, and, you know, things are going to, you have to bring up the new management to speed. There's changes in personnel, and so you give it a little bit. So that's probably factoring into some of what the fact that we're having crickets right now in terms of the first two agenda items. And then as far as any activity from us, meaning EPA reaching out to you, again, that's all region dependent. I can tell you from my region, I'm looking at 22 that we do in 21, which is unusual for programs. Usually you have guidelines for 22 money issued in 22 and competed in 22 and awarded no later than the last day of the fiscal year, which is September 30th of, in this case, would be 22. That's the new money coming up, right? Right now we're in the middle, for example, on the non-job training competitions, we are in the middle of the 21 funds. Competed, and people are waiting to hear back, and we'll award those by no later than September 30th of 21. So the fiscal year money stays all activities within the fiscal year money of the fiscal year that the money's from, and job trainings, because we didn't have 2019 money, you know, it's right. Just they shifted that a bit. So that said, like I said, it's up to each region what they're reaching out to. I'm planning 22 outreach right now, so I wanted to get a good read, and I made phone calls, so I've touched base with all of my grantees. That's what I do, but it just depends on your regional coordinator. I happen to be a project officer and the coordinator, but it just depends on your region. I know the status of where they're at and what's going on with all of them and any issues that they may have raised, and I'm working with all of them right now in terms of any issues that came up and making any connections. You know, basically just we are a resource to you, and I guess that's the, if I was to leave you with anything that I want you to remember, is that we work with you. It's unlike where other programs where we give you money and we leave you alone. We are in the thick of it with you, and if you sink, we sink with you. If you, you know, if you swim and you fly, we fly right there with you. So just remember that we are a resource for you, and we're here to help you, not just make sure that you stay within the parameters of the terms and conditions, which is something we have to do, but we're more than that for you. Does that
do you
does that
think
help?
The you yeah it does a lot. Do you think the RFA for 22 will go out before September 31st? In other words, last year, they actually, they might start accepting proposals before the, in other words, before this September, or do you think they'll wait till after October to send out the RFA for 22?
You know, I'm having to read tea leaves just like you, but do remind me, because you probably have these, I haven't had a chance to go look at what the schedule was last year. When did the guidelines go out last time? Do you remember? Was it
they,
in the summer?
They went out in the Yeah, it was in the summer, and actually they were due before the about August or so, I believe.
I think they were
August
early,
20th.
Didn't they go out
they were.
Early? Was it? Well, do you remember the release date? I honestly don't remember.
Yeah.
Or roughly
yeah.
what month? June. Yeah. Let me see.
I think it was they were due in October. August. I think of last year. Some of the people online may know exactly, but
do you remember when the
words,
guidelines actually came out? Did they come out in June? End of
yes, about that time. Yeah, 60 days before the end of August. So June.
Okay, so
June they
so
came
it
out.
you know, whenever I don't know if they're going to stick with the same cycle, because again, that was what we did had to do with what happened in 2019. I do know they try to stagger it from the environmental funds that we put out for assessment, cleanup, and revolving loan fund, and I imagine they'll continue to try to do that. I'm not sure where this new administration is headed yet.
I'm kind of hoping to stick to last year's schedule, which would be like a June RFA, where the request for proposals, and then, you know, for the 22 grants, you know, the proposal would be due before, you know, in like a late August or something. That would be nice if they do that, but I don't know. As you say,
what I don't know is, because we're competing 22 money, and I don't know if they'll. You see what I'm saying? We already got our 2021 money out, so I don't know. And with COVID, they made the fact that programs are delayed because of the trainings. In most cases, I think are probably delayed because of COVID. I don't know if they'll factor all that in. We certainly haven't had any discussions, and even if we had, I couldn't tell you. You know, there's only so much I could share, but we haven't had anything. I really don't know.
In past years, they've also issued the RFA after the fiscal. So the 22, if they use that model, 22 money, the 22 request for proposal wouldn't go out to September or October. If they use last year's procedure, then it would go out, you know, this summer.
Earlier,
so,
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we'll just have to see. But the announcements, as you said, the money has to be out the door by September 31st. So that means, you know, as I said, and what I mean by the out the money is everything's got to be seen, signed, sealed, and delivered by the end of the summer. The announcement will be made quite a bit before that time. So,
well, see, and the thing is, and that's what's confusing people, is like we've already awarded our 21 money, right? We're looking at 22 money, we're going to award, for the new competition, it's a matter of when are they going to decide to do it.
When are they going to do that, this competition that everyone's hoping, they submitted their applications, we're hoping that we hear it might be late winter, early spring, where they make the initial announcements. And then they'd have to do the negotiating and the work plans and approval of work plans and everything before the end of the summer.
The 21 money always has to be awarded no later than September of that, whatever number, in this case, 21. So it would be September 30th, 21 is the absolute latest date we could get that money out. But depending on when they announce, we could get us in there.
The announcement has happened before.
Because we need to have 90 days to award, I think. We have to have at least 90 days.
Yeah. So that brings us into, you know, spring, early summer, so late winter, early spring. So maybe March, that might be pretty much on schedule, March, April, that time frame. So I guess the thing that we can say is be patient, and I'm going to ask you a question, and I know I know you don't know the answer, but I'm just going to plant it. It would sure be nice if there could be a supplemental for some of these people caught in COVID. I'm really concerned about grantees who were caught in the middle of their cohorts or in the middle of their grants. Those who get re-upped will be fine, but those who, you know, they're on the second year of their grant and they got caught in this, and they can re-up with no cost to the government, but they're caught in a real difficult situation, you know, because they're burning money just the same, you know, trying to keep the program semi-going. But it would be nice if, and I'd like to say it all depends on the administration, on the budgets and everything else. So
that's
we're kind
why
of
I was looking
here
at the executive order. In what it's saying, that's why I was looking at the executive order that was signed on, that the president signed on Inauguration Day.
Environmental justice, but I couldn't find it. Yeah.
Oh, it's there. Well, it's spelled out in terms of equity and underserved communities, and it's asking for action within so many days. So, yeah, I think I think we're thinking along the same lines, because I was thinking of taking this and throwing out a proposal. I've already got notes on give this to my boss. And, you know, there's certain branch chiefs like mine who are very active with other branch chiefs across the country that were instrumental in getting us the extra funds last year. Obviously, headquarters carries the heaviest lift in that ask, but definitely driven by some of the regional branch chiefs like my boss, Stanley Walker. And so I'm glad to hear that from you, because I will just add that to the piece that I had.
Which led me to
my next question for all of you on the call is, are you all seeing, you know, some of these prices that the contractors have provided were per cohort? And are you all, and of course they're legally binding contracts that you all as grantees have entered into, and I'm wondering with the state orders that are given, and it varies across the country, limits on how many people can be and the spaces, the very issues you were discussing, are all of you seeing any kind of flexibility from your contractors in terms of the pricing maybe going to per individual as opposed to per cohort, since, you know, the cohorts were maybe up to 24 people, let's say, or 25, let's just make up numbers, and now you're only able to get, let's say, 10. And so I'm just wondering if what success you all have had as grantees in trying to make adjustments to the new cohort life that we're under.
Anyone have experience with their contractors?
With getting lower prices, and I want to hear from someone other than Region 7, because I already have that information.
At least here in Puerto Rico, I request the proposals, you know, from the contractors per participant. I'm not requesting per cohort because it's really difficult for us at least to even make a group of 20 participants at one. That would take us really long. So what we do is we try to have groups between 10 and 15, but I always request their proposal in cost of participants. Not by group.
Anyone else?
Good to know. That's a very good point. And, of course, we've talked about the fact that they're going to have fixed costs, you know, to come out. Are they training on site, or are you going to them when your consultants come out? They're coming to you, aren't they? You're supplying the facility.
All depends what the training is. At least the forklift, they can't come to me. Our participants have to go to the facilities where the forklifts are. So that's why I mentioned that we also have to provide them transportation, and that's why the groups are a lot smaller. But we have gotten lower costs for the ones that provide the training virtually. They are charging less because they're not having to come to us or anything. But the ones that are in person, our participants actually have to go there. But usually, I mean, over here at least, when I am looking for those consultants, I always let them know what my needs are. I said, I need, you know, someone that is going to provide them transportation in that cost, but is actually not going to raise the cost. So pretty much we're getting the transportation, like, in kind, because we're not paying for the transportation. They're offering that free of charge.
So, M'lady, I really like the fact that they're recognizing that the ones that are going virtual, they're costing less, so they're charging you less. That says a lot about your contractors.
Yeah. Well, they've been working with us for a lot of years, so they know, like, the type of, you know, they know our participants. They've been really empathetic to many of their needs, and many times they even provided them lunch. I mean, not now, but... Mm-hmm. Previously they did. They used to even provide them lunch because they know that a lot of our participants, you know, don't have the money to pay it. So those are, when we meet our consultants right from the beginning, we let them know, you know, the participants, their profiles, you know, what their needs are, and to see how they can work with us to to make sure that the participants are good, you know, during training.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Wow, is there anyone else there that can that has had an experience with this issue?
Well, interestingly enough, they may. And that's,
okay.
That is a very good point, that if you're going out, a lot of people are new callers, and they're just actually either between cohorts or hoping for the new grant to come through. That's something you may not consider right off the bat, going by participant, because that may change dramatically depending on what happens with COVID. If we go back to face-to-face.
Right. And, you know, I hadn't, since I'm not a grantee, I hadn't looked at that issue, but in my discussions with our Region 7 folks, I found, you know, people saying, oh, I made adjustments on this because, and I was able to train more people because I negotiated a per-person price on the new contract. And, you know, as we were looking at the grants from 18 that were going on in 20 versus the grants that were awarded for 20 that are barely kind of going in their first year, right? And then can also the flip side of that was, which, oh, I had cohort price and now it's super costly because I can only include so many people now given the state restrictions. And so that's why I'm asking the group, because that's what I found in talking to my grant, you know, our grantees. I say my grantees because they're pretty much work with all of them, but we don't have that many. Some regions have a lot more grantees.
Well, you're blessed with, you know, the people that have lots of grantees have lots of problems. So that's,
and then I have
part
one last question for you, Mike. So as I'm reading this executive order, which covers equity in underserved communities, and it's got some actions, it identifies that we need to consult with members of communities. I'm reading it straight out of the order. Consult with members of communities that have been historically underrepresented in the federal government and underserved by or subject to discrimination in federal policies and programs. And, you know, to me, the populations that HMTRI and all of your grantees that are on this call and some that aren't here today but attend on these PLCs, represent those. And I'm wondering if you would be open, if I recommend, this is just put a note here for myself, if I was to recommend that this PLC be used as one means of reaching these members of those communities, could that be a possibility? I don't want to recommend something that you're not open to.
we reach the people who reach the people. So
yeah.
I think, and we've talked about this before, particularly when it gets near to the new preparing for the next application, we really emphasize in working with the community, because our grantees who are on the line now are rubber meets the road. They're there.
Yes.
And it's difficult because it's a lot easier to teach in an academic setting. They're the heroes, and what we can do is emphasize this need to get into the community. And some do a better job than others. Some are immersed in the community. Their facilities are in a community center in the center. Some are downtown. We have some, you know, we've talked about Recycle Force. I don't know if they're on the line, but they're owned, run, operated, and supervised by ex-offenders. They're right there. You couldn't get more immersed in the community.
Yes. So not only the PLC call, but also those particular grantees may have spaces where they can get that input, right? Because they're right there in the midst of it. Thank you.
Right.
See, you've improved
and the
it.
The all grantee meeting is where we really want to emphasize that this is an EJ program, and we usually try to remember every time we talk, remember this is an EJ program, and this is what makes the program difficult and why people are struggling now, because it is an EJ program. If we were teaching people with engineering degrees or master's degrees, no problem. If we were training instructors, not a big deal, but that's not who we're about. And so, you know, I think our grantees need some slack and empathy in terms of we're working with the hardest group of people, and and they're doing a pretty good job. So I definitely at the all grantees meeting when,
okay,
and you've been there, when we get all these people together, it's a great, particularly if we could meet in person. I mean, it's a great experience where we could actually, you know, we had a grantee who would wake up to gunshots in the morning. He lived in the community, you know, so you hear those stories and it just tears your heart apart. Now, not everyone is in that situation. We have a range of, you know, what I would consider hardcore to those who are in communities that are just fine. You know, there's high unemployment, but it's not the hardcore. And it's up to that community, which is what makes this program good. It's really a diverse program that way.
But, well, thank you,
definitely.
Mike. No one's asked me, but I'm just going to be proactive and elevate it. So,
I think we need they need all the help they can get right now. Particularly those that were caught in this face-to-face requirement, which is, you know, that's a mandate of the program. So.
And I will also point out what you mentioned, which is the request for, is there any opportunity for getting supplemental funds, given that
absolutely.
Programs are burning through the money? I don't know, others may be in the very situation some of our grantees are, the cohort versus individual prices and in numbers.
Well, no fault
like
of their own. They got caught in the virus. So, some were lucky. But if you're even a first year, second year grantee, all of a sudden you just don't shut the doors and nobody talks to each other. And so the program goes on, but the classes are suspended. So it's fine. We could do a no cost extension, but where does that leave us? You know, 200,000
right.
doesn't go that far. So a supplemental.
So if you have any information on that, it might be helpful if you got, you know, they may not be on the call, but you may have had people reach out to you. You could share some of that with me. That might be helpful in my recommendation to my boss. And
good.
So he can take it forward, Mike. Okay.
That would be great. That would be great. Well, thank you, Alma, as always. We appreciate your input. Any other questions that we got Alma captured here for a few minutes, or any questions or observations? We'll continue in 2 weeks, but anything else? Okay. Well, until next month, which is 2 weeks from now. So we'll be meeting again on the 10th of February, and we'll go forward. You all have a successful couple of weeks. Okay.
Thank you all.
Well, thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Goodbye.